You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, April 27th, 2022. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, it appears both the U.S. and Russia are expanding their war aims. Meanwhile, both U.S. and Russia have a prisoner swap with each other.
Not Brittany Griner yet, though.
Seems only now that the White House is realizing that Joe Manchin will sign off on zero legislation they are hoping to pass. Department of Homeland Security Chief Mayorkas heads to Congress with a new plan for the Southwest border amid some Democratic consternation over Title 42. New Kevin McCarthy audio recordings show who really runs the Republican House caucus. Meanwhile, Bernie Sanders calls on Joe Biden to strip Amazon and other anti-union companies of government contracts. Meanwhile, Delta Airline faces a flight attendant union drive. And they've actually decided to pay their flight attendants.
Whoa.
CDC announces more than half of Americans, 60%, have been infected with COVID at least once. Vice President Harris is now one of them. Or I should say, us. Joe Biden Department.
Not me. I'm the last one.
Joe Biden's Department of Energy raises efficiency standards for light bulbs, will save U.S. consumers $3 billion annually in energy costs when it kicks in. But God knows how much we're going to pay about the conservative whining over it. Lastly, more rumblings that Joe Biden may actually cancel some significant amount of student debt. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the program. It is Wednesday. Of course, here with me is Emma Vigeland. It is so exciting after 2 weeks
to be able to.
Has it been more?
Yeah.
Why is that?
Well, I mean, you were out for 1 week and then another week, and this is the first time we're seeing each other in person. So,
oh, that's true.
Plus a few days.
Oh, wait a second. That's true. I thought we were together Monday, but that's
I know.
A little cloudy.
Yeah.
Long haul.
Right.
COVID. But not only that. Not only are we in studio for the first time in 2.5 weeks more. But it's also the first time in like 3 weeks that I get to be here for you to say your catchphrase.
It's hump day.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm imbuing it with enthusiasm just because we're happy to have you back in studio at least. I mean, I wasn't here yesterday. I know that.
Things got pretty crazy here yesterday.
Yeah, what happened?
Well, not much. Okay. I mean, I had to take a nap. When I walked to the office.
Okay.
And then when I walked home, I had to take another nap for about an hour and a half. And this morning I napped for about a half an hour this morning.
Oh, that's good.
I'm slowly building up strength.
How are you doing on the caffeine? Are you like supposed
caffeine's
to be,
not helping?
It's not helping.
No, this exhaustion is not. It's not. This is.
Time for some amphetamines.
That's correct.
Yes.
Yes, of course. But interesting just to note that 60% of of the country now has been infected with COVID. I suspect that could even be higher because we have a lot of people using at-home tests and are testing, but I don't know. And I will say this, you know, we're at 75% in this studio now.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, it's just a matter of time, I feel like, for me.
What I think it's just sort of, you know, people should take note of. We had three different, I mean, I don't know what the variants were that I suspect the one that I had was different from the one that Matt had. And maybe Bradley, you and I had the same one just because of temporarily. But we had three very different experiences as to symptoms. And I know of at least two people personally who had almost identical experiences to myself. And actually a third, though he is 19, had a similar trajectory, but it just moved quicker.
Oh, so I was about to say, in terms of the people you know, was there any age similarity?
One was my age. Another was in his 30s. And then the other was, like I say, 19, I think, or 20 at this point. And the fact is, some people can get it, and it has absolutely no impact on them. Other people can get it, even if you're vaccinated, and end up dying in the hospital. Something like 20 to 25% of the people who've gotten COVID in this last round who've died in this last sort of like surge were vaccinated. Now, since 75% of the country, or close to it, 70% of the country is vaccinated, you still greatly help yourself by getting vaccinated, because 75% of the people who die come from that 25% of the group of people who are not vaccinated.
And I've seen some pushback that the people that are vaccinated that passed weren't boosted, by and large.
That's also possible. And
I wonder maybe if there's a difference in between Pfizer, Moderna versus J&J.
Yeah, I don't know that we have enough of how granular the data is. Yeah. But the vaccines definitely help you not die. I don't understand why people can't quite grasp the nuance here, because it's not that complicated.
No.
I mean, it's, I would rather jump out of a building from the first floor or the second floor than the 10th floor. If some people get hurt or die from the fifth floor, I would still rather jump out from the fifth floor than the 10th floor, because my odds of surviving are greater. I mean, this is a very simple concept, and some people seem incapable of understanding it. But the other thing that some people seem incapable of understanding is that this virus can have one set of implications for one person and a different set of implications for another. And some of those implications for the other, or that first person, are, range from death to, you know, missing a couple of weeks worth of work. I'm still, I would say, you know, 80% in terms of like my energy level. And who knows what complications may exist down the road. We've seen, you know, so-called long COVID in 30%, you know, in some instances up to 30% of the people who've gotten COVID. That's a broad category, long, you know, what constitutes long COVID. But this is no joke, folks. And so, you know.
We're just glad you're okay.
That's a long way of saying, yeah. Yeah, nice to be here.
Right.
That's it's nice to be here. Before we get into some of the other stuff with Ukraine, yesterday I mentioned that Joe Biden was anticipating, or was to be pardoning, or commuting the sentences of 75 people who are serving long sentences for nonviolent drug offenses. The another person that he actually pardoned yesterday was a guy named Abraham Bolden, who was the first black Secret Service agent on a White House detail. Now, it's interesting. There's a story about him in the Chicago Sun-Times that outlines one reason why he had supposed he had been prosecuted and convicted. And it was supposedly in retaliation for and Bolden served on Kennedy's detail.
Kennedy appointed him as the first black Secret Service member.
There you go. And he complained, Bolden did, about other Secret Service agents drinking on the job and showing up basically wasted for duty. And he, or this is according to a memoir written, I should say, it was noted by Mitchell. I'm sorry, I'm trying to get this here.
What are you looking for? Which part?
Well, this quote in the piece. Go down to the quote here. I don't know. It's all broken up here. But down here, keep going down. All right, right there. Okay. So
The columnist.
Yes, Mary Mitchell. Now, this is interesting. This made the case for a pardon in January column in Chicago Sun-Times, saying that after he complained about agents drinking on the job and showing up unfit for duty, he was threatened to reveal the agent's shortcomings in protecting the president. He was charged with bribery in a case involving counterfeit defendant. After being tried twice, he was convicted in 66 and sentenced to 6 years in federal prison. He served 3 years and 9 months behind bars. What she doesn't mention,
this
oddly
seems
enough,
to be left out of most of the national reporting or articles that I've been able to find on this topic.
His critiques of the Secret Service men were not general. They were specifically about an earlier attempt on Kennedy's life that had happened, what, like a month before?
1963.
Chicago in November, so earlier that month.
Right.
And so there was, I mean, the impetus could have been the same. Like, you're complaining about the Secret Service. It just so happened that there were broad implications for how their failures. But it's just weird how this, you know, first assassination attempt on Kennedy's life has not gotten much of a telling.
Because the Chicago plots, and I think there was maybe a Miami one too, but I'm less certain on that. But this Chicago plot was not mentioned in the Warren Commission.
Well, this is, he tried to tell the Warren Commission about this in particular.
And that's the problem.
Then later, right? And the person, by my understanding, Matt, and you can correct me, who ended up getting arrested for this, also a former Marine like Oswald, also stationed in Japan. These are just curious facts.
Well, it's also just curious that, you know, we have sort of memory hold that as a nation for whatever reason. Maybe, I don't know. But the bottom line is, good on Joe Biden for finally pardoning this guy.
But they're framing it like, you know, he was retaliated against because he was the first black Secret Service member, which I'm sure he
plausible
faced
enough.
immense racism. But like, that being the front facing part of the story, that's like a real hiding of the ball.
And I just want to outline like the way he was framed, speaking of framing. So this is from Jefferson Morley, who we talked about last time with regards to like his work on the assassination. But in 1964, he was charged with accepting a bribe from a Chicago counterfeiter who was the target of an investigation Bolden was working on. He was ultimately sentenced to 6 years in prison, despite the fact that one of the counterfeiters admitted at his own trial that he had perjured himself at the request of the prosecutor.
Yeah, I mean, that's just a detail. So, yeah. I mean, sometimes that happens and you just got to go with it.
Got to hear both sides.
Yeah, exactly. Good for Biden finally pardoning this guy. And I wonder if he'll have anything else to say at this point. It would be interesting.
It's a nice little message, though, I think, to send to, you know, Secret Service and sort of these agencies, like, we're going to not cover this stuff up anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. It is still just unconscionable that he served over 3 years in prison.
What a legacy for the first Black Secret
Service. Exactly. Wow. It's fitting for America.
Fortunately, racism not a problem in the country anymore.
Yeah.
And we don't want to rip open old wounds. We'll get to some clips regarding that. It is amazing just how, like, every day you could have just the most beautiful piece of evidence of the ongoing nature of racism in this country. And yet there's for every one of those, there's two people out there on the right saying that this doesn't exist anymore.
Ancient history.
All right, let's get to this. There's been, I don't know if folks remember, but it must've been about 2 months ago now. There was a clip of Hillary Clinton that we did, that we talked about, where she had equated Ukraine or the potential for Russia to meet a similar fate in Ukraine as they did in Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. And we talked about how this is, you know, problematic because you don't want the U.S. to perceive this war in Ukraine as a mechanism to undermine Russia because it comes at the expense of the lives of human beings.
Because think of the incentive structure, the elongation of a conflict. If you have people in power thinking this way, and I think the reason that Hillary Clinton was going on Maddow's show at that time was to get the attention of some of the people in the Biden White House, like, this is an opportunity to really weaken Putin here. And it's some of the, it's just an insight into, like, the sociopathic way that a lot of our powerful actors in the U.S. government view some of these conflicts as proxies for their own particular interests, the people on the ground be damned. And now we're seeing just a blank check, really, in terms of weapons going into Ukraine, which that I'm sure those same ghouls are happy about.
Yes. Well, I mean, and they're the ones who are offering that blank check. And, you know, Chomsky has, during my brief COVID convalescence, Chomsky was making waves by talking about this problem, where the United States did not, from his perspective, do everything it could to defuse the situation. At the same time, you know, recognizing that Putin is to blame for this situation. It is just a question of what would be the U.S. reaction to this? Would it do everything it could to minimize death and destruction? Or would it contribute to the extension of the conflict as a way of diminishing Russia? With all that said, there's another element here, and that is the agency of Ukraine. You know, and this is the dilemma, I think, on some level that we face on the left. And particularly, you know, the folks who have a problem with imperialism, because this is no doubt Russian imperialism. There's also Western imperialism that is involved in here. It's just one that is a little bit softer, and it is softer. And the question is, you know, how do you, what do you do in this situation? Because should the United States use its power to force the Ukrainians to surrender and essentially give up their autonomy and their own agency to the Russian government? And or I guess the other option is the United States does nothing, does not provide weaponry, which I think, you know, I think it's probably closer to where I would land, or at least not this much weaponry, because it is going to, you know, could potentially extend this conflict on and on. And
I mean, I'm very sympathetic to and understanding of initial weaponry being given and what we did at the beginning, but now we're at a point where we have to have a real legitimate conversation about the flood of weapons going in there. And Germany's now joining in after international pressure. There are forces behind the scenes. You have like the front facing ghouls like Lindsey Graham, but there are forces behind the scenes, like the Hillary Clinton clip that Sam is describing here, who want this to extend. And, you know, it to not be conscious of that is ignorant.
Yeah, and I honestly don't know what the solution here is. I do know that the more weapons we provide to anybody in any conflict, regardless of how just it may be perceived at any given time, means that we're going to be providing weapons to other conflicts that we all agree is completely unjust. Mm-hmm. And so it's a dilemma. It is really a dilemma. And if we are talking of, if the compulsion to provide, and I'm not saying that the Ukrainians shouldn't do everything they can to get weapons. That is up to them. The question is, what do we do with our government? What should our government should be providing? And if we, you know, if we're genuinely concerned about the death and the oppression of people, you know, we have the opportunity to mitigate death and oppression in Afghanistan and in Yemen by not providing weapons, but by just simply, you know, pulling back on some things or giving money. I mean, you know, it's one of the things they recommend, if you want to earn more money, you want to invest money and get a good rate return, pay off your credit cards, because all of a sudden you're not going to be paying out 15%. And that's money that you will have earned, essentially, will accumulate for you. We have that opportunity, similar, analogous opportunity with Yemen, for instance, and or with Afghanistan, by simply releasing money to them and avoiding a lot of death and destruction. So it's, I think it's a far more nuanced question, and I don't know if I know necessarily the answer where we draw the line in terms of how much weaponry we provide for Ukraine.
But there has to be a line. There has to be one.
I would imagine so. I just don't know how you. I don't know how you said it. I really don't. I don't know how you set it. Do you set it and say, like, okay, well, you will lose the cities in the east. You'll lose Odessa. You'll lose Mariupol. But you retain Kyiv. I don't know.
It's not that one-to-one, right?
I don't know how you establish.
But you have to do it within the context of brokering like larger peace negotiations. But at the same time, as you say, it's difficult because this is about Ukrainian agency, and that's what we should be promoting, I guess. Conservatives, like in the clip that maybe we're about to play, are less interested in that, unless you want to move on.
Well, no, let's play this clip here. That was all going to be an introduction to it, but let's play it from here. Rand Paul is questioning Secretary of State Tony Blinken at the Senate Foreign Relations Committee hearing. And there is a nuanced argument about the role the United States and the West is playing here in terms of extending this conflict. But none of that requires justifying. And even people, like I say, like Chomsky, even that guy Chaz Freeman, that Chomsky cited, none of them excused or in any way diminished the responsibility that Russia and Putin has for launching this war. But I give you Rand Paul.
Had they been or are they to become part of NATO, that means U.S. soldiers will be fighting in Ukraine, and that's something I very much oppose.
Senator, could I just say to that, because it's look, these are important conversations and arguments. My judgment is different. If you look at the countries that Russia has attacked over the last years, Georgia, leaving forces in Transnistria and Moldova, and then repeatedly Ukraine, these were countries that were not part of NATO. It has not attacked NATO countries for probably a very good reason.
You could also argue the countries they've attacked were part of Russia.
Well, that
we're part of the Soviet Union.
Yes, and I firmly disagree with that proposition. It is the fundamental right of these countries to decide their own future and their own destiny. And
I'm not saying it's not, but I'm saying that the countries that have been attacked, Georgia and Ukraine, were part of the Soviet Union.
And that
and they were part of the Soviet Union since the 1920s.
But that does not give Russia the right to attack them. On the contrary,
no one's saying it does, but it really has nothing to do.
They were liberated from being part of this empire by force.
I mean, he is saying that.
Yes.
Like, why bring it up?
That was literally Putin's justification for his invasion of Ukraine. And it's been
disproven
time and time again.
Putin's was more specifically that it was part of greater Russia, the Russian Empire.
Right.
As opposed to the Soviet Union. But I mean, you know, really not very different from Rand Paul's argument.
Except that Rand Paul wants to say Soviet because he wants to make it a Red Scare thing, too.
I mean, wasn't Texas part of or Mexico? I mean, weren't we
part of Great Britain?
Yeah, the War of 1812, okay? I guess we have to just be like, you guys go for it in D.C.
Back to 13 colonies for us.
Why don't we just bring back the Ottoman Empire, right?
I mean, it really does open the door to a lot of complications. I mean, how far back on the map are we willing to go here to justify these attacks? It is just bizarre to me.
Well, I think that's an instructive clip on the limits of the anti-war conservative. And by limits, I mean the complete abject immorality of their positions and why they're not real allies in an anti-imperialist, anti-war fight. And two, it's also interesting that he's gone back to this because Republicans like Trump and others started with, you know, we don't really care. Russia can do what they want. It was polling badly. They walked it back a bit. Maybe now that the dust is settled, they're reengaging in that rhetoric. Who knows?
It is. Yeah, it's interesting to see where they're all landing on this. One of those guys was J.D. Vance.
Oh yeah.
And we played a clip yesterday. Was it yesterday of Trump at the J.D. Vance rally, or was that Monday?
I think Monday.
This guy said a lot of shit about me.
Right.
Yeah, curse. But apparently J.D. Vance has doubled his approval rating in polling position.
Yep.
He's now in the lead in Ohio. 25% of the people are undecided. So it remains to be seen. But we should just say, just an update, Herschel Walker and J.D. Vance are now – Herschel Walker seems to have, like, walked away with the Republican nomination in Georgia. I haven't seen any polling with Walker versus Warnock, but
and it also even looks like Trump's candidate in North Carolina, Ted Budd, is doing a little bit better than he was before over former Governor Pat McCrory. So it looks like a few of Trump's horses are doing pretty well.
So, yeah,
we'll
that's
see.
The point of this, right, is that even with J.D. Vance, it being so on the record of how aggressively anti-Trump he was for a while, he's debased himself enough. He came crawling back and kissed the ring with tongue. And so now Trump is rewarding him, and it literally pays off. The fact that he's in the lead now is unbelievable. We were mocking him for months about how he was, you know, plateauing at 7% or whatever it was.
Cellar dwelling. Yeah. But what's even more interesting to me, is less about J.D. Vance doing that, because we've seen that time and time again. Ted Cruz, you know, was one of the early initiators of that. Or maybe it was Little Marco. I can't remember. But what's more interesting to me is that Trump has not in the past had this kind of impact in primaries. In the past, he has sort of failed to get his candidates, as far as I can remember. Or maybe it's been at the very least a mixed bag. And I wonder if there is just simply, you know, and it remains to be seen. I wonder if this is a sign that that either the forces aligned against Trump in the Republican Party are weakening, or just Trump's allure on the Republican Party is just getting more and more solidified.
Or just like there's less noise about Trump, and so when he does appear, it has more of an effect. He's not saturating the news cycle every single day, and then when he decides to show up in Ohio,
it makes more of an impact.
It's more of an impact, yeah. Although, you know,
it's possible.
It's less front facing for him, so it's maybe not ideal. But this is it bodes well for his 2024 chances, in my opinion.
Well, we'll see what happens now that Elon Musk is going to let him back on Twitter. We'll get to that in a bit. I do also want to just talk about this, this ongoing story about Joe Biden with a student debt. This is, you know, we have a breadcrumb to give you, and that's all it is at this point. But a reminder, no one has paid any student debt through the Biden presidency. This was not his first initiative. It was a Trump a moratorium that was established on student debt. That moratorium continues. The latest extension is to run out in August, I believe it is, of this year. Here is Jen Psaki addressing that.
Jen, multiple outlets, CBS, Washington Post, have reported today that in yesterday's meeting with the Congressional Hispanic Caucus, that President Biden signaled that he was prepared to use executive authority to cancel student debt in the coming months. Can you confirm that this was something relayed to them by the president, and why? What exactly is the president considered doing when it comes to student aid debt?
Sure. Well, let me use this opportunity to reiterate that nobody has paid a penny in federal student loans since the president took office. And what we've said from here is that, and what he reiterated, is that he will make a decision before there's an end to that pause. Right now it's been extended through August. And we have talked about how we are looking at, and he is looking at, other executive authority options he has to bring relief to people who have student loans. So that's what he conveyed during the meeting yesterday.
Well, regarding using executive action, though, I mean, is that something, a step now that the president is seriously looking at?
Well, we've talked about that in the past, so he's continuing to look at it.
And remember, there has been an extant memo from the Department of Education lawyers as to whether Joe Biden has the authority to do this.
They're still working on it.
They released the memo.
It's redacted.
But it's redacted because this is top secret information.
Yeah.
And
Biden's still looking at it. It's like a Where's Waldo, right? He's got to just look really hard to figure out if he has the authority to do his campaign promise.
This is better. I mean, let me put it this way. This is a good sign insofar as they have not ruled it out, and they're clearly not. Now, here is the memo. Now, as you can see, it's quite obvious. It is from Miguel Cardona, from the acting general counsel. And what it says is, subject says, the secretary's legal authority for broad-based debt cancellation. All right, so page one is redacted.
I love the color, honestly.
Page
Me too.
Two, redacted
pink,
three,
pink.
Four.
It's pink, and it's scented.
Okay, whoa.
There's just an email. Yeah. Hi, Emma.
Emma, was this to you?
To Emma Bigland.
It's redacted because I've been working on the report.
Yeah, here's the debt cancellation memo we provided, and good read. That's a good read. quick read. The point being that it is hard to imagine, although the incompetence of the Democratic Party, I think at times, with just sheer political
knows no bounds. Acumen,
it's the LeBron James of politics.
Exactly. Yeah. It's not is it's very hard to sort of to overestimate. But it would be pretty poor timing to start the debt cancellation payments up again in September of 2022. It just feels like that would be poor, poor timing. He could punt it again at that point, but it seems like they are teeing up some student debt cancellation. He promised on the campaign trail $10,000. It would be weird that the administration would know that it had no authority to do so, but that they redacted this because they don't want people to know that they don't have the authority to do this. It would also be weird that they wouldn't have communicated that to all the senators and congresspeople who are calling for the release of that memo by saying, hey, guys, you don't want us to release that memo, or, you know, coordinate. I mean, it would be just really poorly done.
They're not going to cancel debt, I think, before the election.
You don't think they'll do it before the election?
I think they are going to punt until after the election. They're terrified of a boomer vote that is going to be angry about this. That's my sense.
It would be, if they did do that, if they like just did the sort of pause and then canceled right before the election, it would be a move by the Democratic Party that I don't know how to, I don't know how I would, like, it would be so unexpected.
But my like, point is smart. They're always operating from a place of fear.
Yeah.
And so they're fearful of the backlash you describe of doing this in September right before the election, but they're way more fearful of banks losing their minds and older voters saying, hey, and back in my day, I didn't have to do this. And so that's where I think they're going to go with it. Maybe, you know, start of 2023, they'll cancel some debt.
In the meantime, one of the ways you can allay their fear that they're going to pay a price for canceling student debt, and also that maybe there's a benefit to them canceling student debt, would be for you to participate in the Send Biden Cancel Student Debt pen. We have a link we will post in our description. It's send a pen to Joe Biden. Tell him to sign executive action to cancel student debt. There are almost 100,000 people who have done this already, and you can go. They're only about 2,000 away.
I don't know why their goal is 102,400 people, but they're going to.
Yeah,
that
seems
soon.
Like an
very specific, odd
goal. But go for it.
Yeah, you can be one of the last 1,000 in there.
It is sponsored by the Student Debt Crisis Center and helpful to continue to pressure, because there is a debate within the administration between, you know, people who would be terrified. And here's the thing. The arguments that this would contribute to inflation are spurious because no one is paying this debt as it is now. You will not be injecting more money into the system than exists now. Whatever that debt payment that you were servicing, a couple of $100, $100, $500, $400, $300 a month, you're not servicing that debt right now anyways. 45 million people who have student debt in this country. And so it would not increase the amount of money that is out there. It would be just an austerity move to reintroduce this student debt. I think they should go for it. And the bottom line is, you know, it's not like there is a single issue out there that anyone can articulate that the Democrats are running on in 2022. Like, I can't even articulate what they're running against.
Well, we covered this when you were out. There was a Politico playbook piece about how Democratic consultants, after they saw, did you see that viral speech from the Michigan State Senator?
Yes.
After they saw that, they realized, wait, we should fight back against anti-CRT, anti-LGBTQ bills in this country. Well, and this is the blueprint to do that, as if they didn't think about doing that before. Even abortion was encompassed in that Politico.
Ryan Cooper has a piece at the American Prospect arguing that exact same thing, that there is a lot of opportunity for so-called moderate Democrats in these so-called frontline seats to argue against what the Republican Party is actively doing. Particularly if you're in one of those frontline seats, there is a good chance that your state is either rolling back abortion rights or is beginning to threaten the rights of LGBTQ folks and attacking your Republican opponent for this. Is an opportunity that's just sitting out there. And the idea that, you know, the Democrats would go on the offense against anybody but, let's say, the squad, just seems to have completely escaped them. But hope springs eternal, as it is, as it were. What else should we talk about in this? What's that?
Gates and McCarthy.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, yes. More audio coming out for Kevin McCarthy. Somebody really wants to be leader, and it's unclear who. I mean, I know this audio probably came from Liz Cheney, right?
Yeah, this is not unclear, I think. I mean, in terms of at least the original audio. And let's just, like, keep reiterating. It is unconscionable that this is drip, drip, dripping out. It's so, so unethical.
By the
New York Times reporters.
Yeah, it's unbelievable to me. It really is just.
And do we think it's the Times withholding it from the public or Jonathan Martin and Alex Burns withholding it from the Times for the book?
I'm sure they spoke to someone at the Times and there's, you know, there was an understanding.
It
seems to me it's fraud, right? I mean, the implication when I read the newspapers, they're telling me the news that they're aware of. I mean, I said this the other day. People understand that. Yes, they're doing everything they can to validate a story. So if it takes them a couple of months to you know, properly source a story, then it's going to take a couple of months. But just hanging out until we can monetize this we can optimize the monetization seems like a poor way to deliver the news. Nevertheless, here's Kevin McCarthy. It is a House Republican leadership call. From 15 months ago, January 10th, 2021. And here he is talking about some of the wayward members in his caucus.
The thing I want to bring up, and I'm making some phone calls to some members. I just got something sent now about Newsmax, something Matt Gaetz said, where he's calling people's names out, saying an anti-Trump in this type of atmosphere, and some of the other places. This is serious stuff people are doing that has to stop. I'll make individual calls.
I think Mo and Louie's comments, too, a lot of members have said some real concerning things about.
Did they say something today, too?
Not since Mo was at the rally, you know, the we're kicking ass and taking names thing. At the Trump rally,
what did Gates say?
Gates brought up Liz specifically. I just saw that on Twitter.
Someone just sent it. Gonzalez just sent it to me, so I'm calling Gates. I'm explaining to him. I don't know what he has to say, but I'm going to have some other people call him too. But the nature of what, if I'm getting briefing, I'm going to get another one from the FBI tomorrow. This is serious shit to cut this out.
Yeah, that's I mean, it's potentially illegal what he's doing.
Well, he's putting people in jeopardy, and he doesn't need to be doing this. We saw what people would do in the Capitol. you know, and these people came prepared with rope, with everything else.
Now, first off,
man,
one could only imagine how many Substacks would have not been written had that audio tape been revealed. You know, sometime
in a timely fashion.
In a timely fashion, right? The idea that even the Republican leader was saying, this is serious shit. People are showing up with rope. Steve Scalise, the guy who once said, I'm, you know, David Duke without the baggage, is saying this could be illegal. There's so much violence and so much anger that, and remember, like, how much just grief AOC got for being nervous.
Yeah, for acting like it was something more than a rowdy tour.
Right, like acting like it was some serious shit, that it wasn't just boomers, you know, taking a stroll through the Capitol.
Especially given, I don't know if people remember, the memes that are shared were shared about her in that ICE group, for example, of her being sexually assaulted, as the barrage of messages I'm sure she receives on a daily basis. Like, yeah.
This is Kevin McCarthy being worried about Republicans.
Himself. His own ass. Himself,
right. I mean,
and he's not a woman who could be, or, you know, assaulted by her. They were worried about their lives because there were threats to their lives. People died that day.
Yep.
Yeah. And, like, Gates responded. He said, and this is in an article about it, he called Scalise and McCarthy, quote, weak men. While I was protecting President Trump from impeachment, they were protecting Liz Cheney from criticism. And so, like, that is the crux of what this, you know, why Gates is going to lean into this, is because this is an extension of, are you with Trump or are you not with Trump? And that's why McCarthy and, you know, Scalise are going to downplay these calls now, is because they are terrified of being more than they were terrified for their own lives. Yeah, Gates wins in this situation.
Gates won this argument 14 months ago.
Yeah.
Not in least part because the Times refused to release this information at that time. Now it's conceivable that the source in which they got the tape from refused to release, you know, refused to allow them to release it. That's possible.
Possible that someone whose name rhymes with Schmiz Shaney.
Yeah, it could be. I don't know. Patrick from Worcester on the IM just says the other potential McCarthy leaker could be Elise Stefanik. I don't know why she would be. Would she have been on those calls? It's unclear. But the bottom line is, you know, there should be a lot of people out there saying, you know, I guess I had it wrong. I guess my underestimation of how serious this January 6th thing was. Was wrong. We won't see that, of course. And frankly, this is old news. If someone anywhere thought it was a good idea that this is going to coincide with the you know, January 6th revelations about what you know, who was texting Mark Meadows and et cetera, they have a fundamental misunderstanding of the way that news is consumed in our society today. It's really stunning. But it's funny to watch, and of course it will have no, you know, no implications, because the Democratic Party, the leadership of the Democratic Party, on just again a sheer analysis of how they have done politics, has essentially diffused this as a wedge issue as much as they possibly could by establishing the narrative that we need a strong Republican Party, that there are good Republicans, that they refuse to tie the Republican Party with Donald Trump. Joe Biden is even, you know, like when you invite Republicans into the White House and say, let's negotiate and pretend like this can happen, you are diffusing that narrative. Here's Tucker Carlson with his reaction to McCarthy's leaked comments.
Kevin McCarthy of California told his close friend Liz Cheney that he hoped the social media companies would censor more conservative Republicans in Congress. Donald Trump, the sitting president, had already been silenced by those companies, but McCarthy wanted the tech oligarchs to do more, to force...
Pause it for 1 second. Do you remember the clip we played of Tucker Carlson yesterday saying that the Biden administration had the biggest podium in the world? The biggest podium in the world to say their edicts and to besmirch conservatives. And that podium, of course, was in the White House. But the next day, Tucker Carlson says, by not being on Twitter, Donald Trump has no way.
No
voice.
Yeah.
Yesterday, being the president was the biggest podium in the world. Today, being president without Twitter, the smallest podium in the world.
But McCarthy wanted the tech oligarchs to do more, to force disobedient lawmakers off the internet. Quote, quote, can't they take their Twitter accounts away too? Those are the tape-recorded words of Congressman Kevin McCarthy, a man who in private turns out sounds like an MSNBC contributor. And yet, unless conservatives get their act together right away, Kevin McCarthy or one of his highly liberal allies like Elise Stefanik is very likely to be Speaker of the House in January. That would mean we will have a Republican Congress led by a puppet of the Democratic Party. So you wouldn't know any of this.
Yeah, you know, maybe Kevin McCarthy will eventually become an MSNBC contributor. That is part of their
that would be
hiring
the trajectory,
practices,
yes.
Right?
That would be the trajectory.
First the Lincoln Project, then MSNBC
I'll take those
contributor,
odds.
Right?
It is pretty amazing, though. They got Kevin McCarthy to heel, essentially, to the conservatives quite quickly. That's why this audio comes out and is of any surprise, because there was no indication he had those feelings as of essentially, you know, January 20th of 2021.
Even Jim Jordan sticking by him. He's gotten a lot of the Freedom Caucus at his disposal.
Oh yeah, they want a weakened guy like this because he will do exactly what they say.
It's just to go into exactly what's going on at social media companies. Like, Facebook was trying to do some moderation of hate stuff like the last 5 years, and they realized they couldn't.
You mean censorship?
I mean, yeah, potato, tomato. They can't do that because they end up getting too many conservative politicians in their dragnet for like hate speech.
Right, right. We'll talk more about that in a bit because I'm so psyched to watch what happens with Elon Musk.
I saw that you said, I saw a clip of you on Twitter saying you don't care about this story.
Oh, no. I don't. It's not that I don't care about the story. I don't care that Elon Musk is taking over Twitter.
Why?
Because I think it's going to be fun to watch the thing implode.
Yeah, Sam's blackpilled on Twitter.
Okay. All right. Well, fine. But like, what it represents is, I think, an issue.
Oh yeah, no, I think it's an issue. It's just I don't care that he's doing it. I don't care. Like I don't think there's
Twitter like, turning into 4chan.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly, cuz I don't hang out on 4chan. My life has been fine without using 4chan on a regular basis.
I do agree with Matt though to an extent that like I can't imagine Jack Dorsey's politics are like too dissimilar from Musk.
Of course not. That's why I think this is going to be fun. That's why I think this is going to be like a train wreck. The dude is already like retweeting Mike Cernovich.
Yeah.
He's already harassing retweeting his, like, Mike Cernovich, allowing ethics. Mike Cernovich to attack the people at Twitter. But let's go into the fun half.
Okay. And then we'll talk about it.
I
mean, the issue is that this is a new gilded age in which billionaires like Bill Gates have cornered the market on public health and is like the largest private farmland owner in the country. Like Musk is buying a major media corporation to take it private, so you know, like he can.
Oh, I am all in favor of outlawing billionaires and putting them in jail. Frankly, if they don't hand over 98% of their wealth to a confiscatory tax, I want to make that absolutely clear. But there's a certain inevitability when you have people running around with that kind of money are going to expend it on stuff that's a whim, because of course, if I'm a billionaire, if I've got $250 billion at my disposal and I can expend, you know, a quarter of that to get one of the biggest media platforms in the world.
Let's talk about it in the fun half, because I got more to say on that. I mean, he's taking on a bunch of debt, which will be interesting.
Oh yeah. No. I can't express how much I think this is going to be a train wreck.
Well, yes.
Folks, I'll tell you about one media platform that is not dominated by a billionaire.
That is a train wreck?
No. What? The Majority Report needs your support. You can help the show survive and thrive by becoming a member. Now, today we are doing an experiment. If you are watching on YouTube, we're going to put a new link in the description and the chat, and you're going to have to move to the fun half.
To
a separate stream. That will be the fun half. We will fire up as soon as the fun half music starts up. Not sure exactly how we're going to implement this, you know, going forward. But the bottom line is, if you have the financial means to support the program, please become a member today at jointhemajorityreport.com. We've already gone through some of the challenges that we've had this year, not the least of which was our advertising broker moved to dynamic advertising. I don't want to do that. And in some ways,
I don't know
we
what
can't.
That means.
It's a long story. But the bottom line is, it took some investigation, but we found out they stopped selling the show to anybody who wasn't already a previous client, like sometime in 2021, because they're just a behemoth and they had moved to dynamic advertising. We don't offer that. We're one of the few people on their platform that don't. Whatever. Point is, we rely on our members to keep the show alive. Join themajorityreport.com. Also, don't forget AM Quickie, amquickie.com, the Discord, majoritydiscord.com, and Majority Live. Come see the show at the Wilba Theater in Boston, dude. You will not regret it. Going to be a great show. We got Natalie Scherr. We've got some activists Extinction Rebellion will be there. Ted Leo is going to be doing tunes.
That's exciting.
That is super exciting. And, of course, we have a special guest who's going to be there that you will not want to miss. So check it out. Majority Live, the Boston show. We're only 2.5 weeks away. Matt, what's happening in the Matt Leckian Media Universe?
Yeah, tonight on Left Reckoning, we've got Luke Savage on to talk about his Dead Center book. We spend about an hour, a good long interview, beating up on centrism and like people like Beto O'Rourke and the people who lost over in Labour UK under Keir Starmer's leadership. So tonight, really good beating up on the center show, patreon.com/Left Reckoning. For members of our, what are we calling it, Solidarity tier tomorrow, David and I are doing a what called the Left Reckoning Spring Virtual Meetup. It's going to be on Zoom. So subscribe to patreon.com/Left Reckoning at the Solidarity and above tiers, and you can join us tomorrow. I'll probably be on some intoxicant or another, so I'll be extra loose.
That's the big selling point. Forget the Solidarity tier. It's the check Matt out completely effed up tier.
What's the leading intoxicant that you're going to go with, you think?
Marijuana.
Okay, gotcha.
All right, folks.
Check the links in the description, folks.
See you in the fun half. You will see the link there, and you can see the live stream continues just on a different link. See you in the fun half. 3 months from now, 6 months from now, 9 months from now, and I don't think it's going to be the same as it looks like in 6 months from now, and I don't know if it's necessarily going to be better 6 months from now than it is 3 months from now, but I think around 18 months out, we're going to look back and go like, wow.
What? What is that going on? It's nuts! Wait a second. Hold on for a second.
The Majority Report.
Emma, welcome to the program.
Hey.
Matt.
Who?
Fun. What is up, everyone?
Fun.
Nomi Key.
You did it.
Fun.
Let's go, Brandon.
Fun. Bradley, you want to say hello?
Sorry to disappoint everyone. I'm just a random guy.
It's all the boys today.
Fundamentally false.
No, I'm sorry. Women's...
Stop talking for a second. Now let me finish.
Where is this coming from, dude?
But dude, you want to smoke this, 7-8?
Yes.
Hi, me? Is it?
Yes.
Is this me?
Is it me?
It is you.
Is this me? Hello, is this me?
I think it is you. Who is you? No, stop. Every single freaking day. What's on your mind?
Sports. We can discuss free markets and we can discuss capitalism.
I'm going to go for that.
You libertarians.
They're so stupid, though.
Common sense says, of course.
Gobbledygook.
We fucking nailed him.
So what's 79 plus 21?
Challenge met.
I'm positively quivering.
I believe 96, I want to say. 857-210-3551. One half. 3/8.
9/11, for instance.
$3,400. $1,900.
$5.43 trillion.
Sold.
It's a zero-sum game.
Actually, you're making me think less of
it. But let me say this.
Poop.
You can call it satire. Sam goes to satire.
On top of it all, my favorite part about you is just like every day, all day, like everything you do.
Without a doubt. Hey, buddy, we see you. All right, folks.
It's just the week being weeded out, obviously.
Yeah, sun's out, guns out. I don't know.
But you should know.
People just don't like to entertain ideas anymore.
I have a question. Who cares?
Our chat is enabled, folks.
I love it.
I do love that.
Look, gotta jump. Gotta be quick. I gotta jump.
I'm losing it, bro.
2 o'clock. We're already late, and the guy's being a dick. So screw him. Sent to a gulag?
Outrageous.
Like, what is wrong with you?
Love you, bye.
Love you. Bye-bye.